Thank you for the invitation and for this very nice introduction. So I'm glad to be here at this workshop. And I'm going to talk about some work in progress. So this is based on an article, but the most part of the talk is the current project with João Faria Martins from the University of Leeds. Okay. So what is the motivation? So basically, there has been a lot of work on Toralf-Viro TQFTs and also state sum models with defects. So for instance, my own work, but also the work of Niels Karkeville and Lukas Müller, who did this in the TQFT framework. And so basically, one can construct Toralf-Viro TQFTs with defects. Okay. And this is for quite general categorical data or higher categorical data. So the bulk is labeled by spherical fusion categories. The coda mention one defects by bimodule categories with bimodule traces. The coda mention two defects by bimodule functors. And the coda mention three defects by bimodule natural transformations. So in principle, one could now say, why consider this again if it's all done? The reason I want to consider is that this is rather abstract and implicit, so one has difficulty in a concrete setting to say, okay, what is now the vector space assigned to the boundary surface with defects, and what is kind of the linear map associated to a cobordism. So the hope is to look at this in a simple setting, namely the simplest possible setting of untwisted Dijkgraaf-Witten theory with defects, and from this to gain some geometrical intuition. So what I would like is a more gauge theoretical and intuitive and geometric formulation. And also something that can be more efficient and concrete for physics applications, so where one doesn't have to choose always a triangulation of the manifold and then having hundreds of little triangles and tetrahedra and compute with that, so that's not efficient. And also, I'm interested in using the two-dimensional part to, as a Kitaev quantum double model with defects to compare with other approaches and, see what it gives in this case. Okay, without defects, of course, this is well known by the work of Balsam and Kirillov that if one has a Toralf-Viro TQFT for a spherical fusion category that comes from a Hopf algebra, then one can recover from this Kitaev's quantum double model for a Hopf algebra at the boundary surfaces. So in the talk, I'll do it the opposite direction. So I start with the Kitaev model and explain what we are doing there. And then in the second part of the talk, I'll generalize it to Dijkgraaf-Witten theory. Okay, and here I only consider the quantum double model for a finite group. I first recall the quantum double model without defects, only for a finite group. So the quantum double model takes an oriented surface, and we use an embedded graph to describe the surface. So there are not so many conditions on the graph. It doesn't need to be a triangulation. It can also have loops. The only condition that is relevant there is that if I remove the graph from the surface, I get a disjoint union of disks. So this means the graph needs to be fine enough to resolve the topology of the surface. Okay, so what does the model then do? So first, one defines a Hilbert space that is just as many copies of the group algebra as one has edges in the graph. So E is for the edge set. So this basically means I assign a group element to every edge of the graph, and then I consider the linear combinations of all these states. And then I associate to every vertex in the graph a vertex operator. So what does this operator do? Well, first, it's not one, but for every given group element, I have a vertex operator. And this acts on the group elements of the incident edges of the vertex. So here I have certain edges that are labeled with group elements. And what this operator does, it left multiplies the incoming edges with the given group element and right multiplies the outgoing edges with the inverse. So this is like a typical graph gauge transformation at a vertex. And then for every phase, one has a phase operator. So this is also labeled by an element H of the group. What it does, it takes a state and then looks at the group elements assigned to the edges that arise in the phase. And if they're oriented product, so I need to take them counterclockwise. And if the edge is oriented parallel to this, I just take the group element. If it's opposite, I take the inverse and I multiply them together in the way they are. Like I start here, G1 inverse, G2 inverse, G3, G4, G5. Yeah. So if this is equal to H, then the state is just multiplied by 1. If it's not equal to H, then it's multiplied to 0. Okay. Now, one can make out of these vertex and phase operators commuting projectors. So in case of the vertex operator that describes something like gauge transformations, I just sum over all the gauge transformation and renormalize by the group order. This is the Ha integral of the group algebra, and this gives me a projector on those states that are gauge invariant at the vertex. And for the phase operators, I can do a similar thing. Here I take the unit element of the group. So then the condition is that the oriented product of all these group elements is equal to 1, and that I can see as a sort of flatness condition at the phase. And these operators A and B do normally not commute, but these projectors here, they do commute. So all of the projectors for all the phases commute with the ones for the different phases and with the vertices and so on. Yeah, and then one can define a Hamiltonian that is usually just taking the sum over all of these projectors with a negative sign. Yeah, and then one has the ground state of the model or the projected space, the protected space. That's just the intersection of the images of all these projectors. Okay, and this ground state is a topological invariant, so it depends, of course, implicitly on the choice of a graph. Otherwise, I cannot define this Hilbert space here and the vertex and the phase operators. But it turns out that this protected space is independent of the choice of the graph, and in that sense, a topological invariant. And what it is, precisely, is the free vector space spanned by the conjugacy classes of group homomorphisms from the surface into the group. And this is also what the Dijkgraaf-Witten theory would assign to the surface. So this can be seen as a two-dimensional part of the Dijkgraaf-Witten theory. Yeah, then there are also excitations in this model. So there one picks a site. This is a pair of a vertex and an incident face. Like here one can see I put a small marking. So this selects one face and one vertex, and this is associated with an excitation. Yeah, and this, for every such choice of a site, the associated vertex operator and face operator form a representation of the Drinfeld double of the group. So this is kind of a brief recall of the Kitaev model. Are there questions? So this can also be generalized to Hopf algebras, finite dimensional, semi-simple ones, but I'm not commenting on this today. Okay. So now one wants to build a quantum double model with defects. So first one needs to decide what is the defect data. So we take again an oriented surface and a defect graph on the surface.
You need time-like defects?
Time-like?
It's in time.
I'll explain in a moment what kind of defects. So first I need to decide what I want to use as the data. And this data is in principle known from Toraev-Viro TQFT. Here we just need to specialize this usual general defect data for Toraev-Viro TQFT to the special case of untwisted Dijkgraaf-Witten theory. Yeah. And what it means is to the regions of the surface. So these are the connected components of the complement of the graph. This is like what one would call the bulk. To this one just associate finite groups like before. So this is the theory without the defects. Then we will have edges on the surface, so codimension 1 defects. And to the edges of the surface, we do now not associate a bimodule category. This is too complicated. In this setting, the bimodule category reduces to a finite set X with an action of the two adjacent groups. So here we have sets on which the two groups on the side act. Then we also have defect vertices. And this normally would need to carry a bimodule functor. Here it carries a representation of the action groupoid. So this simplifies. So what is the representation of the action groupoid? So here we have several sets that are incoming at this vertex. They're associated with oriented edges. And we just take the product set of the set, these defect edges that come in. So here x times y times z. And the group we are acting on is just the product of the group in all the regions. And the representation of the action groupoid means just we take this action groupoid and then take a functor to the complex numbers. Okay, what is the action groupoid? Well, it has this objects element of this set here. So a triple of elements x, y, z in x and y and z. And then if we take a triple of group elements for the regions g, h, and k, we just act on each set either on the left or on the right with the inverse depending on where it is. So here for x, the k is where the arrow points to. So k acts on the left and the g acts on the right with the inverse. And for y, the h acts on the left and also the g acts on the right with the inverse. And this gives me a groupoid. So the objects are these elements of the g sets. The morphisms are the group elements. And I take a functor from this groupoid to the category of vector spaces. Does this answer your question about the time-like defects? I mean, there's not really a notion of time there, but you could say that these vertices are kind of lines that extend in the time direction, and the edges are planes that extend in the time direction. Okay. So this is the defect data, and this is just what one gets if one specializes the usual defect data to the setting and asks that it's untwisted. So here I could also add a small co-cycle, but I don't want to have this here. Okay. So now one could in principle apply the insights on the Torre-Alviro defect TQFTs and state sums with defects to define the model. So then if one does this, one takes the triangulation of the surface that is transversal to the defects. The edges are then labeled with group elements if they do not intersect the defect edges or with elements of the action sets. And to each labeled triangle, we can then associate a vector space. So the simplest case is a triangle that does not intersect the defects. Then the edges are labeled by group elements. And the vector space is C if these two up here multiply to the third one. And it's the zero vector space otherwise. Now we can have triangles that intersect the defects. So in this situation, we have two edges that intersect the defect and one that is labeled with a different group, is labeled by group element. And here we do the same as before. We say the vector space is C if the right action of H on this element x2 gives me x1 and zero otherwise. Yeah, the same can be, the group edge can also be attached to the target of one of these. Then we just get a left action and the same picture. And finally, we can have also the picture where one has a triangle where every edge intersects a defect, like here. And then the vector space is just the vector space associated by the action groupoid representation. So this is what one gets. And then one has a flat, one can see in the first three cases, one can see this is a sort of flatness condition implemented by a phase operator as before. So here we just have the oriented product of the group elements is equal to 1, just spelled in a different way. Here we have that the two set elements here are related by the action, and here we have a similar condition. So this is like Okay. I think now it's fine. Yeah, okay, good. Okay. And in these cases, in these three cases, we can see this as a flatness condition. Here we have a defect vertex in there, so we don't have a flatness condition. And the gauge transformations act as before. So we have vertex operators. So we can either have a defect edge, then it connects to a vertex labeled by G and a vertex labeled by H. And then it just acts by left action of the one at the target and right action by the one at the start. And for a group element, if the edge does not intersect the defect, this is just the usual action we had before. So essentially, everything stays as we had it before. And now we could work with the triangulation and compute the vector spaces. But this is a bit cumbersome.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
So would you allow violations of the flatness condition to be defects?
At the defect points, yes.
Okay.
There we have no flatness condition. But there also it wouldn't make any sense to impose a flatness condition because we are combining like elements of three different sets.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll come to this again later.
Wait, but what's the difference between this defect and the regular excitation at the plaquette?
Well, if you have an excitation at the plaquette, you can only have this when you have the plaquette labeled by group elements. So the excitation at the plaquette is a special case of these defects because here we also allow edges to be labeled by sets. I'll come, yeah?
Another question was, it seemed like the zero-dimensional defects always lived on the plaquettes, but I would have thought there's also zero-dimensional defects living on the vertices. Is that not the case?
Well, it sort of will be the case later, or we'll see that this is not really an issue. I mean, this has to do with the choice of the triangulation, and that one chooses the defects to be transversal to the triangulation. But we will get later a triangulation-independent formulation, and then it goes away, this issue. Okay, so what is the problem with this? Some of the problems were already mentioned. This is not very conceptual and also not a very gauge theoretical description, and it depends on the triangulation and it makes it hard to compute. So one wants something more explicit and more suitable for computations, and also one wants something more conceptual. So if I have no defects, I know that this is Dijkgraaf-Witten, what the Dijkgraaf-Witten theory assigns to the surface, and this group homomorphisms from the fundamental group into the group G up to conjugation is something conceptual that is studied a lot. It has to do with bundles, G principal bundles or flat bundles. And I can also see this as some sort of flat graph gauge connections, modulo graph gauge transformations. Yeah. And if I have a TQFT and I have a free manifold where I have two boundary components, then I get a linear map that relates them, and we can describe the matrix element of this map simply as the set of flat, the number of flat connections that coincide with the given states at the boundary up to gauge transformations. So this is kind of a more conceptual picture, and it does not need triangles. So one would like something similar for the defect. So one would like an explicit description for the state sum, and one would like also to have an explicit description for the TQFT, and the more conceptual one. And for domain walls only, so defect edges in our setting and excitations with special data, this has been done to some degree by Morton and by Fuchs, Schweigert, Valentino, and also Schweigert, Voike. But in the general case, it's not clear. So in this situation, one gets relative G bundles, but in the general defect case, it's not so clear. Okay. So now the aim is to implement this first for the Kitaev models, and then later to do the three-dimensional case. So, okay. So in principle, the setting around the edge defect is like this. So here we have the defect, then we have a lot of transversal triangles to the defect. Here we have the edges that intersect the defect, and here we have some group elements outside. But this is kind of hugely redundant because we know that if this should contribute to the vector space in the end, We know, for instance, that X1 is equal to H1 acts on the right on X2 and so on. So if we give one of these elements, like the X1 here, all the other edge data is specified. So this is not efficient, and it makes more sense to just thicken this to a strip. So we only have X1 and X7. Here we have the product of the group elements. And then we have a relation that these group elements here relate the data on this and on this edge. And this can be read off from the graph. So X7, I need to go this edge in the opposite direction. So I get an inverse. Then I take this edge. So here I act on the right. And here I go back this edge, so I act on the left with this product. OK. So it makes sense to thicken the defect graph so that the defect edges become rectangles that are related by a relation like we had here. OK. If we thicken the defect edges to rectangles, then the defect vertices become polygons. And our gauge transformations still act at the vertices. So here we have a thickened edge. Here we have like four group elements, two in G, two in H. And the way they act here is by left action and left multiplication, like this. OK. So we can see the edges of this thickening as gauge fields. And they're labeled with elements of the group and with of the action sets. And the vertices of the thickening are labeled with group elements and can be seen as gauge transformations. And finally, the faces of the thickening contains defects. Now one could say, OK, is this really true? Here I have shown that those faces of the thickening that come from defect vertices contain defects. But there are also other faces of the thickening that belong to faces of the original graph or here to these rectangles for the edges. And it turns out in this situation, one can see them as special kind of the other defects. So this here, I can see also as a representation of an action groupoid. So this action groupoid then has two copies of the set X, one for here and one for here, and two copies, like one copy of G and one copy of H. And what acts on this is two copies of G at these vertices and two copies of H here. And my claim is that what we had before also corresponds to a representation of the action groupoid, namely the one that gives you the vector space C if this edge here is related to the other one by the action of G and H, and otherwise the zero vector space. Then we can also have like a face of the defect graph there. We have only elements of the same group here. And here we can also see this as an action groupoid, so five edges, five copies of G, five vertices, also five copies of G. And then the corresponding representation gives you the vector space C if they all multiply to the identity and zero else. So in that sense, there is no asymmetry between the defect vertices and the faces and so on, because in the thickened graph, the faces of the original graph and the edges and the vertices all become faces. Just some of them are labeled with special representations. We can also consider the bulk excitations, for example, in the picture here. So here we would have an action groupoid, G acts on G by conjugation, and the representation of that. And the representation of such an action groupoid corresponds to pick representatives of conjugacy classes, and then for each representative, a representation of the stabilizer. And that's is precise. Not the same thing. Excitations are a special kind of defect here. Like there are more general defects, and excitations can be seen as a simple kind of defect.
So is the representation of this G to the fifth over G to the fifth different from the
from this one? Well, here I've picked a specific, very simple representation of the action groupoids that basically just fixes flatness. Mm-hmm. Here I could also pick one where I say, OK, maybe they don't have to multiply to 1, they multiply to H. But then I would have to take into account the gauge transformations. And then I would see here I have to not just put one element, I have to put an entire conjugacy class.
I guess I'm asking if the number of sides in this polygon matter.
No. This is just arbitrary examples. I could here do a similar example with a different polygon like here. This would just make it more complicated. And here I could also have picked one where I don't put a dot in the middle, and then I would just have the trivial representation. So this is just for presentation, that it's not overwhelming. And one can also have boundary excitations. They would correspond to this picture, so two copies of the action of the set, and then two copies, also one copy of G and one of H, act on it. And this would correspond to a representative of an orbit in this set, plus a representation of the stabilizer.
So yeah, sort of, and the first line and the fourth line, are they different or are they the same? Like,
that depends on what you mean by different and the same.
That's a better word, like, it's the collection of rows that are available.
No, here I'm just saying we take any representation, and here I've taken a very specific one. So here I admit any representation.
Yeah. So this is not an example of representation. This was the one you wanted to take.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Are there more questions? Okay. Okay, so this is a framework one can use, and now one can make it a bit more elegant. So if we take the dual of this thickened graph, we obtain a quiver. So taking the dual means in each region I put a dot and then I put arrows. So here's a region for a defect vertex, here for a defect edge, then for a bulk region here. And then I just draw duals to the edges that connect them. And I always orient them to the higher dimensional stuff. So from the vertex to the edge, from the edge to the region. And this gives me a directed graph. The quiver, where the vertices are just in bijection with the original defect vertices and the defect edges and the regions. And the edges of this quiver correspond to pairs of a vertex and an incident edge, and then go from the vertex to the edge, or to pairs from an edge of an edge and an incident region, where they go from the edge to the region. So this is the picture I've drawn here. And out of this quiver, one can make a category. So the objects are the vertices, and the morphisms are generated by these edges. Okay, what does this category do? It does two things. It encodes the decomposition of the surface by the defect graph, and also the interaction of the defect data. So the topological content is that the defect graph defines a functor from this category made by the quiver into the category of groupoids. What does it do? Well, it assigns to each region the fundamental groupoid of this region with respect to the defect vertices contained in the region. So this is like a fundamental group, but with more points. For each edge, the fundamental groupoid of the edge with respect to the defect vertices at this edge, and similarly for the vertex. So one might wonder why do I want to consider this? Here the fundamental groupoid is quite simple, but it gives an efficient description. Okay, so it assigns fundamental groupoids to the vertices of this quiver, and to the edges of the quiver, it assigns functors between the fundamental groupoids, and these are just given by the embeddings. And in this way, we get a functor from the quiver into the category of groupoids. On the other hand, the defect data also gives us a functor from this category for the quiver to the groupoids. And this comes from the defect data. So here, to each region, we associate a groupoid. That is just the delooping of the associated group. To each edge, we associate also a groupoid. That is just the action groupoid of the set labeling the defect edge with the group actions in the adjacent regions. And to a vertex, we just take the product of the sets for all the incoming and outgoing defect edges and take the products of the groups in all the regions. So here, this defines a functor. And to the edges of the quiver, we associate projecting functors. So here, when we project from the groupoid for a vertex to the one for an edge, we just leave out all the information about the other edges. And similarly, when we go from an edge to a region, we just send every object to the single object here and just keep one of the groups. Okay, so then one should say maybe a gauge field should be something that relates the space and the defect data in some sense. So here we have two functors, one that is kind of topological, one that encodes the defect data, and one should say that maybe a gauge field connects the two functors. What can one use to connect them? One uses a natural transformation from the topological functor to the defect functor. And if one unpacks this, one sees that it is exactly what we had before. So it assigns to each region a functor from the fundamental groupoid into the delooping of G. It assigns to each edge a map from the set of defect vertices adjacent to this edge, so the start and the target of the edge, basically, to the corresponding set in such a way that this flatness condition is satisfied. So here is again the picture of a thickened edge. So here we have the elements of the set, one at the start of the edge, one at the target. And here, this edge is assigned a group element by this functors from the fundamental groupoid. So here we have group elements, and the flatness condition just is the same as we had before. These two need to be related by the group action. But this comes out of this definition of a gauge field as a natural transformation. Okay, so then one can ask, what is a gauge transformation now? It seems that the categorical data is used up. But one can define it like a sort of homotopy. So here we take a natural transformation that goes from the functor that I get if I tensor the functor T, or take the product with the interval groupoid into the category D. So here, the interval groupoid is the groupoid with two objects and a single morphism in either direction. And here I ask that composing with these two inclusions gives me the gauge fields. So this is like a groupoid version of a homotopy. So this can be seen like as a homotopy between the gauge fields. And if one unpacks this definition, one sees it gives the right thing. It gives precisely an assignment of group elements to the vertices of the thickening. So this is not immediately apparent. One needs to work, but it comes out. And they act on the gauge field in the way that is expected. So if I take some path gamma in a region and apply this fundamental group functor to it, then how the gauge transformation acts is just it left multiplies with the group element at the target of the path and right multiplies with the inverse of the group element of the starting of the path. And for on the thickened rectangles here, it's exactly like we had before. So they're assigned to the edges, to the corners here, and then they act by left or right action. Okay. So by taking this formulation, we see that we get a groupoid of gauge fields and gauge transformations. And now one needs to take into account the defect vertex data. So the defect data for defect vertices were representations of these action groupoids. And if one combines them for all the vertices, then one gets a functor from this action groupoid of gauge fields and gauge transformations to the category of vector spaces. And then one can define the vector space assigned to the surface simply as the limit of this functor. Okay. So one should see what it gives. So the simplest example one could consider is two surfaces with a boundary circle that are glued together along the boundary circle. So we have one surface on the right and one surface on the left. And here we have a boundary circle. So we label the left and the right side by finite groups. And we label this circle here by a finite GL times GR offset. And here the vertex we need to label with a representation. And here I choose what I call the transparent representation. So this is 0 if the two elements assigned to the starting and target end of this edge E do not agree, and otherwise it's C. Okay. Then a gauge field just consists of two group homomorphisms from the fundamental group here into the group GR and the fundamental group here into the group GL. Yeah, and then together with this, we have to select two elements of the set X, one for the starting and one for the target end of E, and they need to be related by this condition. So this is again the flatness condition we had before. Okay, a gauge transformation just consists of assignments of two group elements to the vertex. So we have one vertex, but we get one group element here and one group element here, and they act in the usual way. Yeah, so this is what one has. Now one can look at this functor. So what does this functor do? So first, we don't need to keep the two group elements because the functor gives zero anyway unless they're related in this way. So we can just keep the x at one of this one here. And then the gauge field is a triple of that group homomorphism and an element x. And what it assigns to this is the vector space C if x is invariant under these two. So we have discarded this here and expressed it in terms of that, but the condition at the vertex tells us this is trivial unless these two don't agree. So we have to have this condition, otherwise it's trivial.
So the gauge fields in your picture looks like they're living on the surfaces.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, this is like the bulk gauge fields. But so we have, so this, these are the bulk gauge fields that correspond to these group homomorphisms. And then we also have a gauge field data on this edge, but it's very trivial. It just consists of these two elements that need to be related in this way. So one element is left over. Yeah. And this is the functor. And now one can compute the limit of this functor and gets the vector space. So this is just the free vector space generated by such triples, where the x needs to be a fixed point under the action of these two elements, up to an equivalence relation, and the equivalence relation is what is given here by the gauge transformations. And one sees in particular, if one takes away the defect, that means I set the two groups here equal, and I say that this set here is also equal to the groups, then I have no defect, and then I get back the Dijkgraaf-Witten result. So this is a consistency check. Okay. More general example, are there questions on this? More general example would be to consider some graph on a surface. For convenience, I would say that the complement of this defect graph is a disjoint union of disks. And then we put to each region a finite group, to each edge a finite set with a group action, and to each vertex a representation of the action groupoid. So this is the most general setting. Except that I consider a graph where the complement is a disjoint union of disks. Okay, then I can ask, how can I see the gauge fields and gauge transformations? So in particular, so I consider here some defect edges. So here there are defect vertices. These rectangles correspond to thickened defect edges, and this part here corresponds to a region, to a disk. So then these black edges and also the gray edges are labeled with group elements and the colored edges with elements of the various sets X. And what I see here, what I can do is I can do gauge transformations at the vertices in this region. And if I do this at all the vertices, I can achieve that these group elements here at the boundary of the region are all trivial. And I can do this for each region. And if I do this for this region and then also the other region, then all the black or gray edges are labeled with unit elements. And then this gives me the condition that what is on the left and the right here must agree. Okay. And the residual gauge freedom is then a global gauge transformation inside each region, like applied at the same time of all the vertices. Okay. So then a gauge field is just a product of these elements assigned to the edges. So an assignment of an element of the associated set to each edge. And the gauge transformation is an assignment of a group element to each region. Yeah, and this functor is then given by taking the product of all these representations associated with vertices, and one can then compute the vector space, and what one finds is one has to take in each connected component of this action group, so in each orbit in the set A, one has to take a representative, and then one takes the image of this under the representation, and then one takes the stabilizer, so the invariance under the stabilizer. So this is just the usual formula for computing the limit of a functor from groupoid to vect. But even in this case, one can compute it, and what is this result depends, of course, on what representations I put. Okay, how much time do I have? 10 minutes? Okay, then I go through the rest quickly. So one can generalize this now to Dijkgraaf-Witten theory with defects. So here one has to choose a manifold with a defect stratification that induces a boundary stratification. And then we have the regions are the connected components of X3 minus X2. They're associated with groups. The defect planes are associated with sets. The defect edges are associated with representations of action groupoids. And the defect vertices are associated with intertwiners. So everything is one dimension higher. And this defines, of course, then the defect data for the boundary that is as we had it before. So the regions carry finite groups, the edges, sets, and the defect vertices representations. Yeah?
Why do you need to include boundaries explicitly if you already have defects? If you interface with trivial groups.
You mean that I should see the boundary also as a defect? I could do that, but I want to kind of distinguish this for a TQFT. Okay, so then I can define again a thickening of the defect stratification. This looks like this. So here we have thickened defect planes. They're cylinders, and the vertical edges of the cylinders are colored. The other ones are not. For the edges, it's the other way around. They're also cylinders, but the horizontal edges are colored. And for thickened defect vertex, everything is colored and hence an element of a set. Gauge transformations and flatness work in exactly the same way as before. So for these rectangles, we have the condition that the two elements are related by this relation. And the gauge transformations act also the way we had before. So for each of the components, we get a list of conditions here that come from the flatness. For the thickened defect vertex, we don't get anything. So the picture is exactly what we had before. So the edges of the thickening carry the gauge fields. They're labeled with the group elements and elements of action sets. The vertices carry the gauge transformations. They're labeled with group elements. The faces of the thickening carry the representations. And the regions of the thickening carry the intertwiners. Okay, and now one can play exactly the same game. One can take the dual quiver and construct a category. So then the vertices are the defect vertices plus the defect edges plus the defect planes plus the regions. And we again have the edges given by the embeddings. Just these embeddings are a bit more complicated. And we get again a functor from this associated category to the category of groupoids that is essentially assigning to each vertex the associated fundamental groupoid with respect to the vertex set of the defect vertices, the incident defect vertices. And we get also a defect functor that gives the algebraic content that assigns to each vertex of the quiver, a groupoid, which is either the delooping or it's some sort of action groupoid, and to each edge of the quiver, a projection functor. And then we can define gauge fields and gauge transformations as before. Gauge field is a natural transformation from the topological to the algebraic functor. And then it gives precisely what we need, what we kind of anticipated from the thickening. And the gauge transformation is like a homotopy, also defined exactly as before, and it also gives exactly what we had from the thickening. So this means we have again a groupoid of gauge, an action groupoid of gauge fields and gauge transformations, and we get a projection functor from the action groupoid of gauge fields and gauge transformations for the three-dimensional manifold to the one of the boundary. Okay. Then the last step is to define defect Dijkstra-Witten theory. So here we take a boundary with two components. And then the classical defect data defines a groupoid of gauge field and gauge transformations plus projection functors to the two boundary groupoids. And that's essentially a Fibrand span of groupoids. So the induced map for the product is a Fabration. And the quantum defect data makes out of the defect data at the boundaries gives us two representations of the groupoids at the boundary, and the defect data at the internal edges and vertices gives us an intertwiner here, or a natural transformation. And this is compatible with the composition of spans. So here I have spans together with the representations. Here I have this natural transformation. Here I have another span. So composing the span means taking the pullback here. And the way this is constructed means that I can also compose the two natural transformations here. And this is not new. This was also considered in different settings by other authors. So this is like spans with additional data. Okay. And yeah, what we get in the end is we get a linear map between the limit of the boundary functors here that is induced by a certain sum over all the gauge fields in M that restrict to given boundary data. Yeah. And at this, so this is a bit technical and complicated to implement, but it's exactly what one expects. So then one has a sort of TQFT-like formulation that comes very natural from this formulation in terms of givers. And this for me is much easier than to understand this in terms of triangulations. It has a far more gauge theoretical picture. Yeah. Okay. So the last things I want to say is, so what we have gotten here is a gauge theoretical description of quantum double models with defects of all codimensions and of Dijkstra-Witten theory, untwisted Dijkstra-Witten, with defects of all codimensions. And in special cases that have been considered before, it reproduces the results that were considered before. So here, if one takes the untwisted case and only codimension one defects that are of a quite trivial type, then one gets back these results. Also, the description is concrete and makes quite easy computations. Yeah, and what we really want to do in the long term, after we understand this better, is to understand more interesting examples, also in view of applications in knot theory or invariants of embedded manifolds. We want to include the co-cycles also to have really the most general picture. And in the long run, we want to extend this also to Hopf algebras and see if one can just take Turaev Viro TQFT for spherical fusion category or based on a Hopf algebra and also use these embedding quivers and so on in this case to make such a nice description. And yeah. The last thing that's also interesting for us is there's a generalized notion of TQFT, called homotopy TQFT a la Quinn. And we want to see if this gives us also an intuition that is sufficient to define defects in this more general setting. Okay, thank you for your attention. Yeah.
Is there a way to formulate topological boundaries of these theories in your formulation?
I think there is. So a topological boundary for you is like in the Kitaev model or in Dijkstra-Witten TQFT or how? What do you?
I guess it's like I was trying to use the math word for gap boundary.
Okay, just describe in the mathematical term, what do you want? You want a, like a surface with a boundary?
Yeah, I'm imagining like I have my gauge theory and then I cut it off somewhere.
Yeah.
Like a boundary and I want it to be gapped. So like in a Hamiltonian formulation, it would be like an edge of the surface where there's no gap, there's more something.
I think that if you label this boundary with some set on which the group in the bulk acts, then I think you could define the Hamiltonian more or less before. So you would take the vertex operators that just act as before, only that sometimes you replace the group multiplication by left action. And you also have like flatness condition near the boundary. And I think that this should be gapped. So you can check this. I haven't checked it and computed it, but you should be able to define the Hamiltonian as a direct generalization because the vertex and phase operators are direct generalizations.
So I think there is a known classification for defects, 1D defects in any center of any fusion category.
Mm-hmm.
Central fusion category.
One-dimensional defects.
In 2 plus 1D.
Okay, so they're like defect lines in something three-dimensional. Yeah.
In space-time, it would be two-dimensional. One-dimensional in space and two-dimensional in space-time. So that classification.
Ah, okay. So you're one-dimension lower. It's like when you describe it as an extended TQFT where you kind of see the surface as a cobordism, the two-dimensional one. Or in which...
No, it's just the same, like a defect in a TQFT.
You just mean codimension one.
Codimension one defect in a 3D TQFT. So if it's a center of fusion category, it's given by a bimodule category of the fusion category. So how does that result compare with the construction?
So you consider a I repeat because I'm not sure. So you consider like a three-dimensional TQFT, and inside this TQFT, you have a codimension one defect, so in maybe my language, a defect plane.
Yes.
And you say there's a general result for bimodule categories labeling this plane.
Yes.
So what I know is that the bimodule category in this special setting where you have the digraph Witten is just this set with the two group actions. There's only one bit of information missing, that's this twisting by the co-cycle. So you could have a slightly more general bimodule category in this setting where you don't allow a twisting for the groups, but you still allow it for the defect planes. But this is just a special case of this. I mean, it's more interesting, of course, in the situation where one has a general spherical fusion categories and bimodule categories, but here I wanted it really for the intuition. Yeah.
So it seems to me that it should be that the formula you discussed would apply more generally to any sigma model with sigma model interfaces and sigma model lines and so on.
What are sigma model lines for you and interfaces? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, the bulk is just the sigma model into VG and VG theory. The interfaces you use are sigma models into X, Y.
Okay. And then you also have defect points.
Defect points are essentially line bundles on this.
So what I think will generalize, so if you have a theory that is kind of topological, it's kind of, you can generalize this embedding quiver and probably use it because it tells you how the different pieces of the surface fit together and how the different pieces of the data fit together, and then I think you are able to use this. If it's not topological in the sense of it needs additional data like a metric and so on, then I would expect something more complicated. I think then this embedding quiver is not enough because it's missing data. But I think this could be used. I also think it could be used for Torreyfiero TQFT with spherical fusion categories because it's just an efficient way of describing how the pieces fit together topologically and how they fit together algebraically. And these quivers are nice mathematical objects.
So I was wondering if there's some way to say, I don't know, have a functor from the quiver to spaces, or something like that. Topological space.
I mean, this is this, yeah, this you can also, this is un, is already contained in this fundamental group functor. So I made a functor from the quiver to groupoids,
yes.
But you can make a functor from the quiver to top HD, where your objects are based topological spaces, but with a set of base points, not just one. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of part of the functor I had. It's like the composite, so the functor I'm mentioning now, and then you compose it with the fundamental groupoid functor, and you get the functor I had on the slide. So the appropriate thing would then top B, so base topological spaces.
I was thinking about the part of the data where you associated to something, the group, and to something else, the spaces X, Y, and Z, and so on. Perhaps this could be replaced by maps into BG or any other.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this topological, so what I said at the end, this item here would precisely mean that. These are maps into BG.
So BG is just a different name for sigma models, topological sigma models?
I don't know. I would guess that maybe topological sigma models fall in this framework, but I'm not sure. But the idea of this formalism is that you generalize BG to other spaces. And that you kind of probe then the manifold by maps, not to the group, but by maps to other topological spaces. And that's what we want to do in the long run, when we understand it for Dijkhoff-Witten.
Thank you. Any other questions?
So the category of the defect gauge fields and the defect gauge transformations, you show that it composes nicely, which is nice, but do we know how monoidal, like are there higher monoidal data? Because I thought that we could bring defect points around each other. And
you mean how the coherence isomorphisms for the monoidal data would kind of interact with this in the general case?
Yeah. Or like just how non-trivial are they?
So what I think what one could do here is consider the twisted case. Mm. So in this case, you would consider groups with a co-cycle, and then the bimodule category, so the sets with the group actions would also be equipped with a co-cycle that interacts nicely with the first co-cycle. And then the functors and the natural transformations would give you projective representations of action groupoids. Mm. So I think this is definitely doable. I don't know how technical it gets. And I think one should do this as a next step, and then one can maybe look at how this works for a spherical fusion category. Mm. But, I mean, these computations with the co-cycle are always technical, so I expect this to be the case too, but I'm not really worried about it. I just don't want to do them.
Any other questions? Anything to speak to you?